Good morning, everybody. This is Rabbi Yaakov Hish here on Chol Hamoed Sukkos here in Jacksonville. And I'm trying to get into the appropriate headspace for my remarks today. And there's a lot of chaos going on in the world. Wherever you turn, there's chaos. Needs no elaboration. What I'm trying to do is carve out the headspace where we don't find the chaos, and try to find a platform where I can communicate some ideas or an idea with you that's coming from a place of less chaos and more calm, if that's possible. And it's not always easy, and it's a challenge. I know Sukkos is a time of Matzah Mechaseinu, it's a time of happiness, but that notion is being challenged this year, of course. And I was just reflecting on, we're about to celebrate Simchas Torah, and Simchas Torah is going to look very different this year. We're not able to observe the celebration, the dancing, the singing, the joy with the external expressions like we normally do, with taking out the Sifrei Torah, the Torah scrolls, and singing and dancing. Normally we take that, and it's the highlight of the year. It's the absolute highlight of the year, and this year it's going to be a much more muted celebration. And that in and of itself is a whole separate discussion. But I was thinking about the actual reading of the Torah at the end of Vezosa Bracha. That, the last reading of the Torah, which we do in Simchas Torah, that is the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the death of Moses. And there's this mini obituary at the end of the Torah about Moses. There's a little debate in the Talmud who actually wrote this obituary of Moses in the Torah. Was it Moses himself that wrote it prior to his death, or was it Joshua that wrote it? Those are the two views. But in any case, I personally happen to be the Baal Koreh in our shul for Simchas Torah. I mean, there are other Torah readers as well. And whenever I read these words of the death of Moshe in this obituary, I just get the chills. I mean, just to think of the moment, the magnitude. I mean, the greatest leader of all time. I mean, the shepherd, the teacher, the rabbi, the father, the person that encouraged the people to get through every single crisis and challenge, just pick themselves up and able to get to the next step and finally get to the Holy Land. And everybody was in that generation. I mean, the previous generation passed away, but then the next generation was about to walk into the land, and nobody else more than him wanted to enter the land, and he was going to have to die before entering. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. Just a heartbreaking, passage. And then Moshe dies, and, the curtain falls down on his life. And then there's this mini obituary, and then the last verse of the Torah talks about some of the miracles that he presided over, and says, L'chol yad ha'chazaka, l'chol mar ha'gadol, asher asa Moshe al kol Yisrael, all the mighty miracles that he presided over. Obviously, God, sent Moses to do them. He was just presiding over the miracles. But that Moses did, but what did Moses do? What did Moshe do that he did particularly? I mean, God did the miracles, but there was something Moses did in particular that was singled out over here. And there's this it may just be me, but I find a very compelling Rashi interpretation of what Moses did at the end. And that is, Rashi says, that he broke the tablets. He broke the luchos, meaning he came down and he saw the people. Okay, so let's backtrack. He, after the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, God said, I want you to go up the mountain. You'll have a spiritual moment with me for several days, 40 days. And he comes down with these two tablets. Now, the two tablets were this external manifestation of the receiving of the Torah. He was come. Try to put yourself in Moshe's shoes for a moment. He's excited. He's proud. He's brimming with nachas. He's going to just give over the Torah. He's like a teacher. A teacher. He's just learned. He's ready to give over to his pupils the material. This is not just a class. I mean, this is like the divine blueprint for humanity to give over its mission. And he's all excited, and all of a sudden, he looks and he sees that his people have not just like dropped the ball over here. They've like engaged in like idolatry, and this is like parents. They leave their children for like a short period of time, they come home and the house is like complete chaos. I mean, the teenagers have invited over all their friends and they've done everything wrong possible, and the house is completely turned over. And it's like the parents cannot believe that the children have done this. And picture that image in your head, like times like 5 million. And anyway, so Moses was faced with this moment of truth, so to speak, because he there's nothing more that he wanted than just to hand over the Luchos, hand over the Torah to the Jewish people. But yet the Luchos that he worked so hard on receiving for the people were all of a sudden incompatible with the flock that he wanted to hand them over to. And he looks at the people, and he looks at the Luchos, and he sees they're not compatible. What does he do? And he could have just like fudged the moment, like many of us do. And he goes, okay, maybe we'll do it tomorrow, we'll do it next week, put the Luchos away. Or he goes, okay, we'll just give you the Luchos, here, we'll just get back to ourselves tomorrow, whatever it is. And he says, no, this is not okay. And he takes the Luchos and lifts them up, and he smashes it to the ground. And I mean, it's just hard to imagine. I mean, think about a sacrilegious thing. I mean, just picture in our head for a moment anybody lifting up a Torah and throwing it to the ground. I mean, just think about what a sacrilegious moment that would sound, not only sound like, but think about how wrong that would look. And it says, "V'skima Kadosh Baruch Hu l'day to God." Rashi quotes the Medrash or the Gemara in Shabbos, the Talmud, that says God agreed to him and he said, Yashar Koach Sheshibardi, Yashar Koach. And then the whole process began of receiving the second set of tablets. So, I mean, there's so many different angles to this story. But what I want to focus on is that from all the great life story, from all the great life and the rich life and the illustrious life of Moshe, I mean, this was the man that started, I guess you can say, his professional life at the burning bush, and he leads the Jews out of Egypt, not to mention anything about the confrontation with Paro, the Pharaoh, with the 10 plagues, not to mention anything about the splitting of the sea, not to mention anything about the God appointing him to be the messenger at Mount Sinai, not to mention anything about all the internal strife that he had to deal with over a 40-year period with the Jewish people. I mean, we're not an easy people. I mean, Korach, the spies, Dasan and Aviram, and so many different controversy after controversy, not enough water, not enough food, again and again and again and again. And here we have this mini obituary after he there's nothing more he wanted to do than finally enter the Holy Land, and he was told no. And the last thing the Torah has to say about him is, by the way, he broke the tablets. I mean, even if that was the correct thing, I mean, there's nothing better we can say about the man. There's nothing more inspiring. There's nothing more compelling. There's nothing more There's nothing more that can grab us than saying, by the way, this was the greatest Jewish leader of all time, took the greatest religious item, artifact of all time, and smashed them to the ground. There's nothing, you know, and by the way, this is the end of the Torah. Chazak, chazak, benet chazak, yasher koach, mazel tov, semen tov, mazel tov. I mean, come on. So I've thought about this for a while, and I think for years this has been sitting in my head, and I think of this as a teaching us a tremendously powerful lesson, and that is that in life we kind of want to have everything. What I mean by saying is, like, we don't want to have to compromise on the choices that we make. We want to have great food, but we don't want to have, you want to have chocolate cake, and we don't want to have cost us calorie wise. We want to be able to enjoy life, you know, enjoy all of the materialism, but yet we want to, you know, be spiritually connected. But sometimes we try to thread the needle as much as we can. You know, we're going to go to this place. You know, what's kosher? What's you know, want to go to this restaurant in Disneyland? What's kosher? Okay, maybe there are kosher things. I'm not saying there's not. You know, but everybody has to make their own compromises and their own choices and their own way they reconcile things and their own way they figure things out. We're living in lives with tension all the time, and we're faced with conflict, inner conflict. By nature, that's where we are. We're Jewish people living in a Western world. So some people call themselves modern, you know, Orthodox. Some people call themselves something else, whatever you call yourselves. But the reality is you have to make yourself a choice. And you have to make yourself a compromise because there's this inner conflict and inner tension. But sometimes it's impossible to reconcile the difference. And sometimes you have to pick. Sometimes you have to pick what side you're on. And that's the way it worked for centuries with our people. You have to declare, are you going to give up your faith or give up your life? You have to say, Shem Elkecha, b'chol levavecha, b'chol nafshecha. You're going to give up your life or your Judaism. Thank God, you know, we don't have to, for the most part, do that in our lifetime. But this was a reality for hundreds and hundreds of years our people had to deal with. But even in our lifetime, even if the choice is not so drastic, there are some dramatic choices. And I'll tell you a story I read in a book. I think it was the book, it was definitely a book written by Michael Oren. I think his book called Ally. Now, Michael Oren, if you may be familiar with his story, fascinating personality. He was the Israeli ambassador to the United States, originally American born, made Aliyah to Israel, and is a very effective spokesperson on behalf of Israel. Eventually became Israel's ambassador to the United States. Now, he wrote this book about his experience as ambassador to the United States in a book called Ally. There's a lot of, you know, very interesting, not only stories, but anecdotes. And one thing I learned from that is that there's a law in Israel, Israeli law, which states that if you're going to be, definitely if you're a member of Knesset, but also a diplomat, you cannot hold dual citizenship, meaning you can only hold Israeli citizenship, meaning as follows. So if you make Aliyah, let's say from the United U.S., so now a person becomes an Israeli citizen as well. But they still can, of course, hold on to their U.S. citizenship. So now they're a dual, let's say someone makes an Aliyah from the U.S. So he's a U.S. citizen and an Israeli citizen. And that's what Michael Oren was for years. But now that he was going to become Israeli ambassador to the U.S., he had to give up his U.S. citizenship. He can only be a Israeli citizen. Why is that? Don't ask me. It's a law in Israel. That's the way it is. Go fight, you know, this expression, go fight City Hall, go fight Knesset. So when he was, I don't know who nominated him for the position of ambassadorship, so in order for him to accept the position of ambassadorship, the thing he had to do was he had to renounce his U.S. citizenship. Now, it was a very difficult thing because he felt he was a, you know, loyal U.S. citizen. Of course he was loyal Israeli citizen, a loyal Jew. So what was he going to do? So ultimately he decided, this position of being ambassador for Israel in the U.S. was so important that he was going to renounce his U.S. citizenship. But this was a point that he had to pick. What side am I on? What side am I on? Am I going to be on the Israel side? Am I going to be on the U.S. side? Now, again, I'm not suggesting that you have to pick what side you're on. And we say the opposite in 99.9% of the cases. You don't have to pick. You can be a patriotic American and be pro-Israel. And to suggest otherwise is of dual loyalty is inappropriate. And in fact, it's not just with Israel. You can be a patriotic American and be pro, South Korean as well. But in certain cases, it's impossible to reconcile. So he writes that he walked into the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv, and when he renounced his U.S. citizenship, he was crying and he had tears coming down his face. Because it was a moment of truth for him. Now, I'm just mentioning this story because there are certain times in life where there's a moment of truth that you cannot evade. You just have to make the momentous decision. You have to make this momentous decision. That's what Moshe was faced with. You couldn't evade. He couldn't make everyone happy. He couldn't defer. He couldn't table the motion. He couldn't wait till the next election. He just had to make a decision. There's luchos here, and there's the people there. They're incompatible. What am I going to do? Boom! Luchos get smashed to the ground. Toughest decision of his life, but that was the right decision. That's why it's mentioned at the end. And we have to think of our own lives. We're faced with these tough decisions all the time. And many times we get to figure it out that works to take in all of our concerns, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we just have to pick, where our deepest values lie. Where our deepest values lie, and then we have to go with it. And I believe that's why, the Torah ends with this message. And that's why we end off with this message, and we start our year with start the Torah reading immediately after, to keep in mind this idea that we are going to be confronted as this year starts, especially, in the chaotic times that we live in. We live in extraordinarily chaotic times. And we're going to be confronted with many decisions that are going to ask us to compromise our core beliefs, our essence, our values. And we just have to decide what side of the fence are we on. Sometimes we'll be able to thread the needle better than others, and sometimes we won't. And when we won't, we'll just have to stand up for what we believe in. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a deep breath. Sukkot is a time of Zman Simchaseinu. Zman Simchaseinu doesn't mean jokes and backslappers. Zman Simchaseinu means having a clarity about meaning and purpose, and sometimes having a clarity about our values and about what the correct decision is the best expression of Zman Simchasenu, a time of Simcha. I wish you all a meaningful and a meaningful rest of the Chag and a great Yom Tov and Simchas Torah.